Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Hello and welcome, everyone. This is The Bible on Trial. My name is Dennis, and I'm here with Rick, and we're getting ready to have our Bible study and our study into truth. Today is December 7, 2018, and it is in 1941, this was a day that actually did live in infamy, which was the beginning of World War II for the United States. Although we had been supplying Britain and the Russians for a year or so before that, it's a fascinating study, and I hope you will remember that day, this day, not only for being the attack on Pearl Harbor, but for being a day in which we together have discovered another aspect of truth. I would encourage you to go to our chat room where we have the pertinent information that you will need to get a hold of us or to get a hold of our information, especially spiritoftruthministry.net. We today have 30,029 people who have signed up on the RSS to get notified when we have new material, and we again encourage you to do that. So let us have prayer, and we'll get started and see what it is, where it is that we're going today. Father in heaven, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, bless us as we study, bless us as we learn. Bless us with your Spirit. Put a hedge about us to keep us from being confused by the evil ones who do not want us to know the truth about when we are and where we are in this world and in history. And I pray, Father, that you will do this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Dennis. You know, and good morning, everyone.
Good morning, everyone. We had a and good day, everyone, depending on when you hear this. We have our regular Blog Talk Radio website where some of you might be listening right now. You can go there and you can download. You know, I'll have to. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, Mike Hagelgantz just pointed out that this is the 77th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. That's interesting. You can go to our Blog Talk Radio website, and you can download any number of our past programs. And again, we encourage you to do that because that's that is a fabulous repository of information. So, there you go.
And Mike says that 2,400 men died on that day.
Right.
Why?
Why did they die? Because the United States needed to get into a war.
Do you know what a narrative is?
It's a storyline, basically.
A collection of accounts or stories that are presented together to give a information, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, apropos of nothing, I went and checked how many episodes we have. As of today, we have 995 published episodes on Blog Talk Radio, not counting the 117 that we have on TalkShoe. So we are about to go over we're about to hit 1,000 next couple of weeks. Before the year end, we will have 1,000 one-hour programs. And that is simply, I mean, a thousand hours of material. It's amazing to me.
But the question is, how many people have listened and benefited?
Well, we have 30,029 on the Duoc
WordPress
website.
But we don't know what's going on with Blog Talk Radio.
So, and we are approaching 100,000 comments. Now, a lot of those comments, since we put the new restrictions on the website, we're not getting nearly as many of the phishing kind of comments. But we still get comments. And I'm telling you, to me, if we get to one person, we've done our job.
I am currently working to finish the article that I've been working on for a number of months. I haven't been doing it every day, and it seems like when I start into a quote-unquote regular job, the stressors of life tend to start taking their toll on my psyche and my quote-unquote free time. I need to have a certain peace of mind when I sit down to write, or it's hard for me to concentrate. But yesterday I did sit down at the computer and I wrote about a page, and what I wrote was really beneficial for me. So I hope it will be beneficial for those who ultimately get a chance to read it. One thing that we need to be very cognizant of is who is controlling the narrative that we are being told or we are reading. And what is our what do we think about that? In other words, when we're looking at government leadership, what is our assumption?
That they are there for our benefit.
And that they are all honest.
Honest.
And they would not lie to us to save themselves.
And if you actually believe that, I do have a bridge in the Arizona desert I'd like to sell you cheap.
He's speaking of the London Bridge, by the way.
Yeah, but nobody has to know that. I can sell it to you cheap. I'll sell it to you for $100.
You have heard that we are what we eat, or you are what you eat. What does that little phrase mean? Well, the substance of your organic flesh is composed of the materials that you have consumed through your mouth, and if you have been eating a diet of mainly junk food, then the substance of your organic material will be junk. if you have been eating wholesome, healthy, good food, then that is what the substance of your organic material will be. But what about your spirit? We have been discussing the reality of the spirit. What does it mean? And there are two narratives on this topic presented in the Bible. First is the narrative that I would say is false, because both narratives cannot be true. So one must be false. And that the false narrative is the one that is presented by, of course, you guessed it, the apostle, quote unquote, Paul, who explains that the Spirit is the Spirit of God, and that when you have the fruits of the Spirit manifested through you so that others can see, that you yourself can rest assured that you have confidence to move forward in the Spirit, because the Spirit has given you the certification that you have been possessed, I guess, by the Spirit of God. This Spirit of God, this divine Spirit, as Paul explains, is what you possess at birth, and that it is at war with the flesh, which has its own consciousness. And that brings us to what, in fact, is the human spirit. Where does the human spirit dwell? The human spirit is not the air that is inhaled into the lungs and absorbed into the bloodstream and then expelled from the bloodstream back into the lungs and exhaled back out into the air. That is not the human spirit. The human spirit is that which came to reality when God began the physiological processes in the brains of each one. They became aware. When we listen to someone speaking, when we read a book, we are feeding our spirit.
We were talking about this a little bit before the program started, Rick, and the observation is that you were talking about the heart, and what is the heart? The heart is the place...
The heart of the spirit.
The heart is the place where the spirit dwells, and that is the intellect. The problem with this is that we misappropriate heart for as an emotional response to something, to seeing a little cute little puppy dog. You see, I mean, you have a, or cuddling a kitten or whatever. You have an emotional response. And people say, and people equate that with the heart. Well, that is part of it. There's no question about it. But the greater part is the intellect and the decisions that we make there that will affect our eternal life.
It's also where those qualities that we talk about come into play, such as truthfulness and honesty.
It's where character dwells.
And it's what comprises the character.
Yes.
No one wants to be lied to. I guess there might be a rare person who would much rather hear a lie than to hear the truth. But in general, no sane thinking human being wants to be lied to.
You know, and that's true. And not even a liar wants to be lied to. Because a liar needs someone who is truthful to believe his lie.
And a liar who tells a lie and lives a lie long enough comes to believe that the lie, which they know is a lie, is in fact the truth. They believe their own lie. And we see this in, I would say, in quite a majority of people, particularly on the mainstream media, who are clearly lying, yet they clearly demonstrate that they believe it is the truth, even in the face of the truth.
Evidence, even in the face of totally oppositional evidence.
I once had a pastor tell me that if you were to interview three people who were witness to a certain dramatic and unusual event, you would get three different descriptions of what they saw. Well, maybe. But what you would be getting in truth is how they understood what they were seeing. They were processing what they were seeing, and they were describing it how they wanted it to be, or how it appeared to them. Or maybe their back was turned when it happened, but they wanted the notoriety for seeing it, so they manufacture something. I mean, all of these things are definitely plausible. If you had two of the three that had the same description of what they saw, and the other one would have a variation on what it was, where would you expect to have the truth of what happened?
In whom would you have the confidence that it was true? Well, in the two that actually agreed.
Exactly. Now, when it comes to the Bible and the four the four books that are the first four books in the New Testament: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. In Matthew and Mark, you get basically the same narrative with minor exceptions that do not affect the whole of the writing. John also is consistent with Matthew and Mark, although John writes about different things. Luke, on the other hand, is completely different in describing the same things that are described in Matthew and Mark. Who would you believe actually was there and saw and heard and were describing what they saw and heard? Well, you know that Luke was not there. Luke was not a disciple, although a lot of people believe that he was. Luke was not a disciple. Luke didn't even know the disciples. The only person that Luke knew was Paul. And Luke came to the movement, if you will, through Paul and worked with Paul only. What we really want, if we're honest with ourselves, is a gold, quote unquote, standard, a completely trustworthy witness who will tell the truth no matter what. The devil has rebelled against the truth. He has rebelled against God. The only way that the devil can accomplish his purposes, and the purposes are to be the ruler of the world, he cannot do it through the truth. For if he told the truth, the people would see him for what he is and who he is. So the only way that he can create his kingdom and maintain his kingdom and control his kingdom is through the effective use of lies. A good example of the effective use of a lie is in the garden of the paradise of God. He uses a lie effectively, and I know it was effectively because he got what he wanted. The man and the woman disobeyed God. Plain and simple, that's what it was. It didn't matter to him what would happen to them. He knew that disobeying God would give him what he needed to continue his control over the humans on this earth. This is how he fights the war against God here on the earth. what he has revealed is that if people willingly accept his lies and operate within the instructions and revelations of his lies, he is their ruler. And God, who is just, is, if you prevented by law to come down here and wipe the slate clean and start over again. For the same reason that he did not go down to Egypt, wipe out the Egyptians, and take the children of Israel, or just wipe out Pharaoh and take the children of Israel. No, he needed to have Pharaoh give him the children of Israel. Controlling the narrative is what the evil one is gifted at doing. And you can easily tell those who are working for him, with him, to ultimately accomplish his goals, his directives, and what are his goals? Well, his goal is to continue to rule this world. He has made it his own, as a thief would come and steal something of yours and keep it and use it as if it was his own. It was never his in the first place, but it's in his possession. And that is what the evil one has done. He has controlled the narrative, and the people believe him. And why do the people believe him? Because they don't know any better. And the ones who do know are in the positions of power that he uses to control what you might say are the sheeple. Those who, as long as the screws aren't too tight on them, as long as they have a job and they can earn a living and they can go on vacation and have a house and a nice car and family, okay, they don't really care whether this is a lie or that's a lie. They don't care whether World War I was a lie, and World War II was a lie, and Korean War, and the Civil War, and the Vietnam War, and the Gulf War, and all these wars. It doesn't matter if it's a lie. As long as they have a job, and they have money, and they have a house, and they have a family, and
a nice car,
they can live their life. It doesn't matter if it's not the truth. And how can you say that these upstanding people that we have voted into office would lie to us? Well, I've heard that lawyers and politicians share the same
modus operandi.
Well, yeah. And most politicians are lawyers, but they have the same quality.
If their mouth is moving.
How can you tell when they're lying?
When their mouth is moving.
When their lips are moving.
Yeah. That, and by the way, that's not true for everybody, but in the main, I would say that we're looking at least 90%.
Now tell me, you know, what is going on in France today? Now. Is that because they've been told the truth?
The Yellow Vest Rebellion. No, it's because they have not been told the truth and they just figured that out. So, just going to take a couple of minutes, because what you are touching on is where everyone in the world is today. Why do people believe a lie as if it is the truth? Is the operational question. So what I wrote today is called Cover Story. This will take a minute and a half. An agent provocateur, an inciting agent, is a spy that lives among his or her enemies and using subterfuge and enticements gets another person or community to commit an illegal or rash act or falsely implicate them into partaking into an illegal act that would damage reputation, or to entice a person or group to lose confidence in another person or ideas of another person or group to which they belong. This agent must have a believable cover story to accomplish this deception. We clearly see this today in the political world. We can also see this in the religious and spiritual world as well. The goal of an agent provocateur is to get a person or society to believe a lie as if it is the truth, and do this so well that a person will fight anyone that points out this fact to such an extent that they are willing to go to war to defend their false beliefs. You mentioned war, and that's why wars exist, right there. The Apostle Paul is an agent provocateur of the highest order because through his words, the world, particularly the Christian world, has come to believe that his words come directly from God and must never be challenged in court. Paul has created a world in which sincere believers will believe his words over the words of the person he claims called him to ministry on the road to Damascus. With subterfuge and enticements of salvation by faith through grace, Paul has made the words of Jesus that he gave to his own disciples of none effect, which guarantees that the people that believe Paul's words over the words of Jesus will be lost. When this is pointed out to the Christian society, they respond by fighting back with all their might in claiming that the words of Paul are, in fact, the very words of Jesus. Paul has a wonderful cover story, but do not be fooled. Take Jesus at his word. You see, everyone who lies and knows that they are lying is an agent provocateur. And everyone who is in political power has to make a decision whether or not they are going to lie or whether they are going to tell the truth. And that goes also for every single person who is in religious power or has spiritual authority in this world.
Exactly. The devil must use lies to effect control on the masses. The devil must use lies. If the devil told the people the truth, they would turn on him in an instant.
Right. They would turn on him because they would recognize him. The problem is the lies are so subtle and they're so wonderful and they give you such a wonderful, chilly, emotional feeling of wellness that people believe it is impossible for those lies to be the truth.
Dr. Rich used to talk about doggy doo-doo brownies.
No, that was me.
Well, he did too.
He did too.
You say, well, but aren't you free to say what you want to say? Yes, indeed you are. Does God prevent freedom of speech?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
And that, because that goes against his very character.
You see, God explains this in a parable in Matthew chapter 13, starting with verse 24. He put another parable before them. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. While everybody was asleep, his enemy came, sowed darnel all among the wheat, and made off. There's your truth, and there's your lies. And guess what? Where were the lies sown?
Into the same field where the master sowed
with the
truth.
Wheat.
Right.
With the wheat. It wasn't
exactly.
Lies on one side and truth on the other. It's with the wheat in the same field. When the new wheat sprouted and ripened, the darnel appeared as well. The owner's servants went to him and said, "Sir, was it not good seed that you sowed in your field? If so, where does this darnel come from?" "Some enemy has done this," he answered. And the servant said, "Do you want us to go and weed it out?" But he said, "No, because when you weed out the darnel, you might pull up the wheat with it. Let them both grow till the harvest, and at harvest time, I shall say to the reapers, first collect the darnel, tie it in bundles to be burnt, then gather the wheat into my barn." And what is harvest time? The judgment.
The judgment.
The judgment. Well, a little later on, you know, the disciples wanted to know about what this meant. So in verse 36, he gives them an explanation. Then leaving the crowds, he went to the house, and his disciples came up to him and said, "Explain the parable about the darnel in the field to us." He said in reply, "The sower of the good seed is the Son of Man." So he is the sower of the good seed. He is.
Now, does he say here that anyone that he authorizes is going to sow that seed? You see, what I mean by that is,
it is
the Son of Man whose words are the seed.
And it is
only.
And it is the seed that the Son of Man has sown that is ripe at the harvest, and we find out when the harvest is. So we'll continue to read. "The sower, the good seed, is the Son of Man. The field is the world."
Yep.
Now we're talking about spiritual, because seed is the word. That's the seed he planted, was his word. So we're talking about the spiritual
world.
Heart. Mm-hmm. Of the world, which is each one's individual intellect.
Mm-hmm. And see, again, don't mistake that world for the literal world, because Jesus did not sow his words into the literal world, the world of everyday life. It is sown into the same place where the spirit, it is the spiritual world.
The seed he sowed is what is in the invitation to the marriage feast. that has been offered to everyone in the world, not just to a select group, but everyone in the world.
Correct.
The good seed is the subjects of the kingdom, the darnel, the subjects of the evil one. The enemy who sowed them, the devil. The harvest is the end of the world. Has the world ended yet?
Not to my knowledge.
We're still here.
And I pay pretty close attention to those
you
sorts
see,
of things.
The world has not ended yet. And so here's my question. The Son of Man, is he a liar?
No.
These seeds that he sowed on purpose, and it was when he was here on earth that he sowed these seeds, and we know this because he said that when he went away, the devil came and sowed seed after he was gone.
Correct.
The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all things that provoke offenses and all who do evil, and throw them into the blazing furnace where there will be weeping and grinding of teeth. Then the virtuous, the truthful, the righteous, will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Listen, anyone who has ears.
Got a question.
Ears are the conduit,
yeah,
for information that is spoken that goes directly to the intellect.
Okay, now I have a comment or an observation about harvest and what Jesus sowed 2,000 years ago, evidence of which we have in the Bible given to us by his eyewitnesses. How many years, 2,000 plus years, did everyone who claimed to be of God during that 2,000 years have the truth about what Jesus said simply because they declared themselves to be of God? The problem with that is when they lived, they were not living at harvest time. The seed was still growing at that time.
They were living at planting time.
They were living at planting time. Harvest is when the crop matures and is ready to be taken from the field into the barn.
But what do you need? You need harvesters.
Well, yes. That was the next point.
Yeah.
Because during this interregnum, during this 2,000 years, there was no one ready to harvest the crop.
And the harvest was not ready.
And the harvest itself was not. And by the way, isn't that interesting? That there were no harvesters because the crop wasn't ready. The harvesters only appear at the time of the harvest. How do we know when the time of harvest is?
The faithful and wise enough bondservant is feeding his fellow, feeding spiritually,
right,
his fellow bondservants, giving them their food at the proper
correct
time.
So
and what
when,
is the proper time? Harvest.
So when people say, well, so-and-so had prophetic insight and we need to believe that person, or when so-and-so says, you know, Thomas Aquinas was such a great writer, or any one of these other people that were very spiritual, who were developing the concepts of, say, for instance, Christianity is based on the words of the Apostle Paul. What kind of crop does that produce if it doesn't agree totally and 100% with the words of Jesus Christ? Remember, the one who sows the good seed, this is verse Matthew 13:37, the one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. He doesn't say the one who sows the good seed is the Apostle Paul, is anyone that has claimed to be from me, or anyone that has come before harvest time.
In fact, he makes the point that the devil sows the bad seed after he has planted, after the Son of Man has planted the good seed. In Jeremiah chapter 31, starting with verse 31, see, the days are coming, it is Yahweh who speaks, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, but not a covenant like the one I made with their ancestors on the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. They broke that covenant of mine, so I had to show them who was their master. It is Yahweh who speaks. No, this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel when those days arrive. It is Yahweh who speaks. Deep within them I will plant my law. Where would you plant the law?
Into the intellect.
In the intellect. And what resides in the intellect? The information that we have accepted as the truth, and that we operate our lives based in.
Okay, so what happens if your intellect is filled with information that you believe to be true but is not true? So can you put the truth in on top of that and have it work?
Well, what happened to the ancestors, the ones that broke the covenant? What happened to them? They were judged. They were punished. That's it. What Yahweh is saying here is, I'm going to give this generation, the offspring of those ancestors who broke the covenant, I'm going to give them an opportunity to do what I wanted their ancestors to do. The only difference between this covenant and the one the ancestors broke was who was going to get punished for breaking it. Again, that's it. Because before, the punishment was visited on the first, second, third, fourth generation of those who hated God. That's where the punishment was. So the sons would suffer for the sins of their fathers.
And those people will not be resurrected to, let's put it this way, there's not going to be an additional punishment on them that has not already been meted out.
What the difference with this is that each man will pay for his own sins.
Right.
The law is still the law. It's still the Ten Commandments. What he's saying is that it will be in their intellect, and if it isn't, they will suffer the same things that their fathers suffered. And that's what we know happened, because the Son of God, the Messiah, took the kingdom away from the children of these.
So what we see here is a very merciful God who does not hold the children responsible for their father's behavior.
Right.
Which means they will be given notification that what they believe is not true. They will be given notification to not believe what their fathers believed, Let's look at this a different
way. And believe me, a righteous child would not suffer for the sins of their fathers.
Correct.
I want you to understand that. A righteous child. What God is saying is that wickedness gets worse and worse with each generation. The fifth commandment says to honor your mother and your father, that your days may be long in the land which the Lord thy God has given thee. That commandment was written so that righteous parents would pass righteousness on to their next generation, and that generation who became parents would pass it on to theirs. So it'd be generation after generation after generation, and that's what's included in the second commandment, showing goodness and mercy to thousands of generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. So this is what determines our outcome in the judgment. Whether our intellect is full of the truth or whether it is controlled by lies. That is what determines our outcome in the judgment. You want to think about this. When the Son of God showed up in Israel and he started his ministry, what was in the intellect of the people at the time, including John the Baptist?
That when the Messiah came, he would overthrow the Romans and take up residence as the ruler of Israel.
And was that their expectation?
Because that was the prophecies that they decided that they wanted to accept and
that
read.
That was the teaching of the religious
right.
leaders, the religious authorities. That is what they were teaching. That is what was in the intellect of those people. That is what was in the intellect of John the Baptist. John the Baptist did not get special teaching from a heavenly being who came down and was going to straighten him all out. No. In fact, all we know that whatever message, however it was communicated to John, if it was from an angel that saw him or whatever, but John says, the one who sent me told me how to recognize the Messiah. That's all that one said, who sent me, he said, how to recognize the Messiah. And he saw that, and so he said, behold the Lamb of God, which takes away the sins of the world. And then when he's in Herod's prison, he's wondering, how come he's still there? Because he fully expected the Son of Man to overthrow the Romans, overthrow Herod, take his place on the throne, and then he would be out of prison and, you know, who knows, maybe sitting on the right hand of the Messiah. But yet, he was in prison. That was judgment. And the reason I know that it was judgment, it was not the end of the world, it was judgment on Israel. And they were judged and found wanting, and God took the offer of being the people of his kingdom. He took it away from them. And he said, I am going to offer it to anyone who will willingly submit to the truth. Willingly submit to the truth. So those that say, well, it's been 2,000 years and the Messiah has not returned, and so I doubt that is ever going to happen because it should have happened before this.
And here is a text to prove that what people believe, that, you know, that this will never happen is wrong. Matthew 21:43, therefore I say to you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing the fruit of it. In other words,
And they will
produce
the fruit.
Absolutely,
of it.
Absolutely.
So why has it been 2,000 years? And here is the very simple answer. Because God is waiting for people to wake up, learn the truth, fill their intellect with the truth so no lie has any place in their intellect.
Okay, what's the procedure for that? Because we know that most people have lies in their
intellect.
Well,
I'm going to have to go over that tomorrow.
So this is, yes, exactly. That's what I'm suggesting. Because that's
called the process of sanctification.
Absolutely.
But let me read in closing here. I know we have a few more minutes. Revelation chapter 14, and this is a description of the 144,000 who are standing on Mount Zion with the Lamb. If they are standing on Mount Zion with the Lamb, where are they?
They are in heaven.
They are in the heavens where God dwells. Revelation 14, verses 1 through 5. Next in my vision, I saw Mount Zion, and standing on it, a Lamb, who had with him 144,000 people, all with his name and his Father's name written on their foreheads. They are family of God. These are the offspring of the woman, Revelation 12:17. These are the offspring, the last offspring of the woman, right here being described. I heard the sound coming out of the sky like the sound of the ocean or roar of thunder. It seemed to be the sound of harpists playing their harps. Here in front of the throne, they were singing a new hymn in the presence of the four animals and the elders, a hymn that could only be learnt by the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the world. These are the ones who have kept their virginity, their purity. They've not been defiled with women, false religions. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. They have been redeemed from amongst men, mankind, humankind. There will be women amongst this group. The first fruits for God, harvest is the key here. First fruits are the first ready to harvest. They are the cream of the crop. And for the Lamb, they never allowed a lie to pass their lips, and no fault can be found in them. What is that talking about?
Intellect.
The intellect. Mm-hmm. Now we find in Revelation 3, as we're counting down here very quickly, in the Philadelphia, that says, this is verse 12, I will inscribe on them, chapter 3, the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, and New Jerusalem, and my own new name. You see, the 144,000 are described in Revelation chapter 3, the message to Philadelphia.
This is why it is so important when you are dealing with belief systems to understand that process. So tomorrow we will talk more about the process of sanctification and how to divest ourselves of lies in our intellect and replace those lies with the truth. I encourage you to go to our website at spiritoftruthministry.net, take a look around, especially read our book, The Spirit of the Church, by Rick Sterling and me, Dennis Neufeld. I encourage you to join us tomorrow for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. On behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis saying so long for now. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.